So there I was in Harry's bar in Venice. A short break to that fabulous city, so like anywhere else in the world, to mark a special birthday. And a trip to historic Harry's bar at the side of the Grand Canal seemed the thing to do. Slightly haughty barmen, for they were all men, dispensed Bellinis to tourists like me, who'd been drawn by the history of the place. Hemingway and a host of literary luminaries had made this their snug of choice, and Hemingway had pretty much holed up there for long spells, getting inspiration, one imagines, for his novels. And ever since, awestruck tourists had made their pilgrimage in hope of catching a sense of that literary history in which Harry's Bar is steeped. And who knows, maybe some inspiration themselves for that unwritten novel that we all have in us, apparently. Certainly it was a pretty international bunch who gathered in that famous watering hole and sucked in their breath, steeled themselves for the bill, two Bellinis, Geneva prices, baby. Truth is, I've been in nicer pubs in Glasgow. Inside, the place was very ordinary, and if they had resisted the temptation to upgrade the place since Hemingway and Co. graced its four walls, that would maybe explain how tired and 1950s it seemed, not at all prepossessing. But here's the thing. It was only the history it contained that gave it any value, currency or merit. What it meant was much more important than how it looked, with its uncomfortable chairs, its cramped conditions, and its exorbitant prices. What it meant, that intangible sense of touching history, that intangible sense of something more. Churches can do that too, give you more than you see, taking you beyond the stonework and the shiny oak pews to the something more, the history they contain, the story they tell. The countless prayers offered in that holy place that make it sacred and precious mean that it is able to touch us deeper than we ever imagined. The churches of Venice offered meaning too, beyond the frescoes and the candles and the glittering brass lamps and the overblown sculptures, a silence and a stillness that sounded deep in the heart. It was good to go there too. Now, like many Scots, I grew up with an experience of religion that was pretty limited. Locked into a particular style of church, the way we sang, the kind of worship, the boundaries beyond which we never strayed. And if it's all you know, then you're unlikely to question it. It can soon fit like a comfortable pair of slippers. But what if there were out there a whole other way of doing it? What if there were an inheritance of faith I'd never been encouraged to draw on, and which lay neglected and all but forgotten? That could be the contribution of Celtic spirituality. John Bell of the Iona community has helped many people rediscover something of their roots in a particularly Scottish expression of faith. Some of our folk have been there to Iona, that thin place where the translucent membrane between the sacred and the secular is very thin, and it powerfully puts us in touch with ancient feelings, truths, real moments. But perhaps even that is not the whole story of Scotland's rich spiritual history. Another name resonates around the world when the talk gets round to new ways of drawing deep from the well of spirituality. And that other name is the Findhorn community. You may have heard of it. Tucked away in a snug corner of the Murray Firth, the community has been, since the turbulent 60s, both a beacon and a magnet for all of those who quest for inner happiness, for meaning and purpose, for a whole new vision of tomorrow. I visited this intriguing place to make a programme for Radio Scotland and drew on the varied experiences of the people for whom it was both the starting place of their restless spiritual journey and in some cases the end point. If I'm honest, my fear about Findhorn had been that it would have been just too off the wall and wacky for me, intense people with huge agendas dropping off the edges of good common sense, taking refuge in some kind of esoteric, mythic belief system that I could never identify with. In fact, as I recall, it was nothing like that. People seemed genuinely to be seeking after a serenity of spirit, and that searching expressed itself in a tenderness and gentleness that was very appealing. The place itself seemed like a throwback to some lost innocence, a 60s love and peace mood which seemed to enfold even the hurried visitor and the bustling observer with a stillness that could only be good for the soul. It was hard not to be affected by the quiet impact of the enthusiasm and the vision of the people. And all this far, far removed from the staid and spirit-cramping structures of religious styles too tame to inspire, too barnacled with bureaucracy to stretch the mind. This was spirituality free to search and to soar, unhampered by the centuries of accidental dogma and the grudging legalism that besets so much tradition and religion. Perhaps a little untidy, it is nonetheless immensely liberating. It feels liberated and liberating. Maybe the hidebound doctrinal rectitude that hobbles the practitioners of what Scottish religion has become have something to learn from the risky, edgy delight of Iona or Findhorn. But listen, there are so many places of pilgrimage, Lourdes, Fatima, Santiago de Compostela, and even where I used to work in East Lothian, the opportunity to join the White Kirk to Haddington pilgrim walk during the summer months. Or perhaps a wee trip to Lindisfarne, or a special garden dedicated to reflection and prayer. Any one of these moments can put us in touch with the idea that our experience, our life, can be more than just a journey to nowhere. Our story can be perceived as a purposeful pilgrimage. And in fairness, pilgrimage can be not just for religious reasons. A fair percentage of those who share in the adventure that's called the Camino, that famous walk through France to the shrine of St. James at Santiago de Compostela, do so for 100 reasons other than faith, religious devotion or piety. They do it to find out about themselves, to think big thoughts, to search the deep caverns of their character. They go to wrestle with the issues that threaten their peace of heart, and they trudge the long miles hoping to find answers to nagging questions that just won't go away, to journey with others in the solidarity of the search for truth. A pilgrimage is not a crusade, something that depends on rubbishing the beliefs of others in order to find satisfaction. It's personal and private and profound. I remember interviewing pilgrims in the church square in Santiago as they arrived exhausted and yet deeply affected by their experience. Some wept with relief and joy, all of them believers and those simply embracing new possibilities for their lives, new priorities uncovered en route, all of them glad they had had the courage, the tenacity and the vision to step outside the ordinary and transform the everyday journey that is their life, their story, into an unforgettable, game-changing pilgrimage. We don't have to travel on a crusade to the Holy Land for the holy things to touch against our spirit. Instead of the stridency and rush and busyness of a crowded diary, finding time to still our spirits in places all around us that have been soaked in the spirit for centuries and where the sense of God's presence is allowed to speak to the secret place of our soul. When we do it, it works. We know that. We remember the places where we've been, where it was right to pause and build an altar to the Lord. Let me finish by telling you about my all-time greatest moment of pilgrimage. It's a cave, simple, cold. A few pieces of church furniture are dotted around it, a cross here, a candle burning there. A small group of people are singing a hymn, I think in Italian. I am in Antioch, a bustling city deep in the south of Turkey. On the very edge of town there is a church, the Church of St. Peter. Not really a church as we might think of it, but a cave in the hillside, where in the earliest days of the church's story, wait for it, Paul and Barnabas worshipped and prepared for mission to the world. But now it is 2,000 years later. The area has changed and Antioch is a predominantly Muslim city, crammed with people, buyers and sellers. And on a Sunday morning, a handful of pilgrims gathers on the hillside in the cave church of St. Peter's. I am so far from home. I feel so very far from home. And yet here in this church, the very place where the New Testament tells us Christians were first called Christians, I feel very close to home. The sweet singing of the Italian pilgrims embraces and enfolds me, and I cannot stop the tears. This is a most precious moment, the most precious moment of all my 3 months' travels, in touch with something of the very beginning of the faith, something profound for my faith. And there in that simple, cold, first church of Christendom, I pray for my congregation, for the men and women. So very different, so many miles away, so many centuries away from this little sanctuary, back in my home church, yet part of the same thing, the same story, the same faith. I thank God for the people. I recall the folk whose prayers were sustaining me on the study leave experience, as they had sustained me through all the years of ministry thus far. I thank God for the blessings and encouragements that were beyond my deserving. I prayed for the future of these congregations, that we might serve him well and with full hearts. Nothing of all the places I saw, the historic sites I visited, the great focal points of faith I was privileged to brush against, nothing touched me as much and as deeply as there, standing in the very place where Paul and Barnabas committed themselves to mission to all the world. I was there all those dark centuries of turmoil and sacrifice later, because of the decisions they had made. My little congregations in Scotland were a direct and unbroken link with that brave past. And now I was back there, breathing in the spirit of those great champions of the faith and having my tired, thirsty soul refreshed and revived by the gentle singing of these Italian pilgrims, one with me in Christ, one with all of us in faith, love and worship. It was a special thing, and I wanted to share it with you.